Kia ora and welcome to Worker's Voice. Spend the next hour with us as we discuss the tribulations and triumphs of building workers' rights and increasing fairness in the workplace. This show is produced by Unite Union.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Worker's Voice. I'm your host this month. I'm Joe Carlin, senior organiser with responsibilities for Sky City. And I'm joined by one of my colleagues from Sky City, Shirley Wang. Shirley, you've been doing a lot of work with migrant workers this month, eh?
Yes, I have.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And on my extreme left, yet again, Mike Treen, National Director for Unite Union. Mike, how are you?
Fine, thanks, Joe.
All right, well, let's get straight into it. We've got an election year here in New Zealand and also abroad too. Many exciting elections happening abroad. I suppose before we go to talk about New Zealand, we might have a look at what's been happening abroad. I mean, we had a big one in France there last week, Mike, where the extreme right got a huge vote with the Front National 35%. Yeah, any thoughts about the dangers of that kind of election?
I think people are casting around for solutions and blame for the situation that people find themselves in. So, sort of modern 21st century capitalism seems to have come to a dead end in terms of being able to improve the lives and living standards, opportunities for people in virtually every country in the world now. So there was a sort of a glory period after the World War II and into the 60s and 70s where progress appeared to be on the up and up, and a sort of a more tolerant and more civilized attitude generally, I think, you know, in terms of moving forward on areas, some other areas in terms of equal rights and anti-racism and support for women's rights. But the last decade or so, we seem to have ground to a halt and even going in a very, very backwards direction. So social progress has stagnated, living standards are stagnated, rights for working people have come under attack, including from governments that are traditionally working people voted for. So you know, social democratic parties like the Labour parties in the UK and New Zealand, Australia, and in socialist parties in Europe. So parties that working people traditionally look to for answers weren't providing those answers, and just running the system, it appeared, for those who are already wealthy and privileged.
I suppose when workers think about countries like France, we kind of think of France as a very radical country, you know, a lot of workers' rights, strong unions, you know, willing to protest at the drop of a hat, you know, block motorways and you know, take their bosses hostage and all sorts, you know. So how in a country like that do you think that we're actually celebrating that the fascists only got 11 million votes? You know, and the other guy got 16 million. I think more people probably abstained, 13 million or something abstained.
It was a bit hard for if you were a if you're a working class person in France to have in the second round of the election. There wasn't really a candidate that you could vote for. The non extreme right winger was a. Quite right, you know. He's a strong,
privatized a lot, kind of.
Yeah, he's a strong proponent of what's been dubbed neoliberalism, privatization, more markets, reducing labor rights, so-called labor market reforms, and you had a right wing party versus a more right wing party, but which the more right wing party, the fascist, or the one that comes from a sort of a fascist background, was blaming immigrants, blaming running that sort of anti immigrant racist sort of campaign, and getting a lot of support for it because there weren't Many answers being provided by the...
Well, they kind of repackaged it, though, haven't they? I mean, it's not the old, you know, jackboots and swastikas, you know. It's more kind of concerned about what they call globalism, you know, and then like a patriotic nationalism or something.
Yeah, well, although fascism has always had a nationalistic sort of element to it. You know, they have this party has its sort of roots in that sort of fascist sort of tradition. I think it's just a pretty, it's sort of evolved to be in a pretty, just a sort of, in a more mainstream right-wing racist sort of party in a sense. But still, you know, still the ideas it's propagating are dangerous. Blame everybody else, everybody except the system, because the system, they want to keep supporting the system. So, so you try and direct people's anger towards other people rather than the system. But it's just a diversion. We need it. It's a diversion for people, and it's we need to find. We need to find a way of changing the system so that it's able to deliver, and we're not fighting among ourselves for the scraps. And because what these right wing parties do is they promote us to be turned sort of savage in that fighting over the scraps, and that's dangerous for us. We need to unite all working people. And you know, migrant and non-migrant, brown and black and yellow and green, and men, women, transgender, all the rest of night working people to change the system. So it's not based on profit; it's based on human need, and works on the principles of solidarity. I think that that's where humanity came from, and that's where we're going to go to in the future.
Mm-hmm. I visited France in 2004, I think it was, during the European Social Forum, where all unions and campaigning groups from all around Europe came together. And rather having it in the centre of Paris, they went out to the banlieue, you know, these big suburbs that you might have seen in the film La Haine, you know, and we think of a very romantic kind of idea of Paris. It's a huge city with huge poverty, huge Arab and black populations from the colonial days who are now young French. And I think it was Bastille Day. I got off this train station and walked into these military guys. They were all old paratroopers from the Algerian War. And they had the French tricolour, which I've always thought of as a kind of progressive kind of symbol of the French Revolution, with kind of gold gild on it with the names of all these parachute regiments. And it was a fascist rally, and there were young black kids and Algerian kids kind of throwing stones at it, and there was the riot police, you know, and it was like a big eye-opener for me to see this kind of side of France, you know. This kind of, people think French, you know, French working class, very progressive kind of country of revolutions, but there's also been this other nasty part of France, a brutal empire, the war in Algeria. They even killed 200 Algerians in Paris in 1961 on this bridge that we visited, you know. So I think, you know, there are these forces rising in Europe again. And do you see it connected at all with the kind of Trump election in America? He was backing Le Pen in this election, eh?
Well, it's the same thing. It's blame the victim for the social problems. So they were both running on nationalistic programs, both running on economically nationalistic programs, America first, France first. They're both running on anti-immigrant platforms, both running on trying to appeal to working people against the establishment, and getting some traction, because a lot of working people have suffered rather than progress in over the last recent decades, and so you saw And so you've seen the collapse of traditional parties. And in some ways it was happening in both the United States and with the essentially the takeover of the Republican Party by an outsider, Trump, a billionaire outsider, who just sort of completely sort of trounced and took over that party and on a program that was different from the traditional program of that party. So he had to use his wealth and power and just sort of in that traditional party end up is becoming an instrument. There was almost a sort of a revolution inside the Democratic Party with a complete outsider, again, not even a member of the Democratic Party, Bernie Sanders. Almost winning the nomination against the insider, Clinton. Now, in France, you had the collapse of the two main parties of European who have run France for the last decades, the Republican Party, their sort of traditional right-wing party and the traditional left-wing party, both collapsed. And they didn't, neither of those parties had went through to the second round. So you had Le Pen on the right and Macron, who was sort of a neoliberal outsider, but didn't create his own political instrument in order to run. So the Socialist Party was down to 5 or 6% of the vote. And the Republicans were
that's the equivalent of the Labour Party.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. And then the traditional National Party, the Republican Party over there, was also out of the final round. So the two main parties of France over the last over many decades, where both parties eliminated, and another on the left, you had a completely new party that got almost as many votes in the first round as the two front runners. So they're all around 20%.
Because that's the message of hope, I suppose, from the election as well. This chap, what's his name, Mélenchon, is it?
Yeah. He had a much more radical sort of left wing program. Similar in some ways, Sanders also in the United States. They were blaming the system, trying to blame the victims of the system for the problem. So they were posing questions and giving a much more left wing and popular answer, and that was getting traction. Now, those sort of ideas becoming mainstream, a more radical left-wing economic social program that wants to transform society, that wants to put people before profit, those sort of ideas need to gain great attraction. And we're also seeing it in the UK with the election of Jeremy Corbyn as leader of the Labour Party. Now, all of the establishment trying to bury the shit out, bury Jeremy Corbyn on the biggest load of crap possible, but they're failing.
He wants to take us back to the 70s, Mike. You were there.
The good old days. Yeah, they were there.
Seems nothing, pretty good.
Nothing, we could walk outside and get a job. We could knock on any warehouse or any construction site and get a job overnight.
Now, how big were your flares?
There was nothing. Wasn't too this fashion
questionable.
Mike's flares were actually quite large. There's a picture of him up in the USA student hall.
We all wore flares. But his message is now starting to get out in the UK as
rising in the polls,
creeping up in the polls, right? So he can't knock Jeremy. So he's hung in there against he won the election with the opposition of 90% of the MPs of his own party. So there was also again a sort of a revolution is starting to occur within that party. So traditional social democracy and the traditional sort of right wing policies have these sort of more. It's actually the moderate centre is being driven out, in a sense. The more moderate centre for both the right and the left is losing support, and people are going to the left or the right, a more radical left or the right, to try and find a way out. The problem with that is that if the left loses, then the nightmare of fascism is the end result. But we can only hope and try and encourage the left to be as strong as possible and triumph.
Interesting things around language, yeah. I mean, when we think of the centre, people say the moderate centre, moderate, moderate, moderate. There's nothing moderate about what's happened in the last 20 years to working people. People kind of said it's like the extreme centre, you know. And the other thing about language is this kind of attack on Corbyn's policies, because actually, if it was policies, you know, the kind of stuff that Sanders, Corbyn, other people are articulating are supported by the majority of people in society, right? 70-80% of people in America, you know, I was watching this stuff of these town hall rebellions that are happening when these Trump Republican people have to justify their attacks on the limited health reforms that Obama went in. You know, furious, angry people saying, you are a direct threat to my wife, to my children. If you cut this program, you will kill them, you know? This kind of anger that people have towards the system.
That's a fact in the United States. The Obama reform was extraordinarily limited, and the nature of it gave some, the nature of the reform gave some legs to the right-wing criticism, because what Obama did was extend insurance companies. So he didn't sort of introduce universal access, or a socialized healthcare system. He introduced a compulsory insurance system that extended coverage to tens of millions more workers, but it had the principle that you couldn't exclude people for pre-existing conditions. So that was the one progressive side to it. But it was completely based on people paying insurance to buy healthcare and forcing people to buy healthcare who may not necessarily want to. And so forcing four small employers to provide it and forcing workers to pay for it as well. Now, it muddied the waters in terms of increasing availability of healthcare. If they'd, and it's the nature of the Democratic Party, which very timid, very mild, very sort of half-assed reforms that often leave the way open for criticism and anger or people being frustrated. But it did extend the coverage by some tens of millions of people, and that was and now the right wing is trying to take that away from people and the danger of that, because people will die as a consequence. So many other of the so-called reforms that the Trump administration, where he feigned like all these right-wing and fascist-minded people do, they feign a concern for working people. The German fascist party was called the National Socialist Workers' Party. They pretended to be socialistic in mind, and they pretended to be sympathetic to working people, but they were simply tools of the wealthiest, most conservative layers in German society, just like Trump is, and all of his changes are designed to enhance their power, reduce their taxes, increase their wealth, and do it at the expense of working people. So that sort of perspective for the future of humanity is a very dangerous one, because it's also associated with that more right wing, is a nationalistic approach and a confrontational militaristic approach in foreign policy as well. So escalate the tensions against Syria, escalate the tensions against North Korea, maintain or increase their presence in Iraq and Afghanistan, that military solution is not a solution. So if we want a world that lives in peace, we've got to have a world that's not based on exploitation and oppression.
Well, we might take a song there, since you mentioned the increasing threats of war from these kind of nationalist people. This song's called We Don't Stop by Michael Franti and Spearhead.
Never stop, y'all. 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 order, a war for gold, a war for money, and a war for souls. A war on terror, a war on drugs, a war on kindness, a war on hugs, a war on birds and a war on bees. They got a war on hippies trying to save the trees. A war with jets and a war with missiles, a war with high-seated government officials. Wall Street war on high finance, a war on people who just love to dance. A war on music, a war on speech, a war on teachers and the things they teach. A war for the last 500 years, war just messing up the atmosphere. A war on Muslims, a war on Jews, a war on Christians and Hindus. A whole lot of people saying kill them all. They got a war on Mumia, Abu Jamal. The war on pop is a war that's fair, a war that's filling up the nation's jails. World War 1, 2, 3, and 4. Chemical weapons, biological war. Bush War 1 and Bush War 2. They got a war for me, they got a war for you. Can't stop when the beat just drops. We can't stop when the rebel rides. We can't stop until we hit those heights. We can't stop because we love this life. To the new day, sing to the new day, rhyme to the new day, transform hell into heaven. God lives through, grab hold of today. Yesterday is over, tomorrow may be too late. Everything is one, but the one is unbalanced. Music made full of dollar, like soul and talent. Really ain't it over by the feeling you was having as a child, running wild with the mind programming, set and threatening.
Yo, establishment,
get in this energy.
Lay back and see
the next man wrecking.
To the masses, lay
hey, yes, then brethren.
You get to ask him,
where, when, Mr. President?
What do you know?
It's evident, setting it slow.
How does it go?
An unprecedented event is about to unfold. The devil can't start blocking the globe, pulling the sound. Here, freedom come knock at the door. They try locking the door, but we about to explode. We got the firefly, tiger eye, apocalypse flow. So deep in the bottom of your bottomless soul. Sin, nine darts, flying out without a pistol. Redesign lost minds, got out of the cold. Bring order to a world that is out of control. Truth, you say, I say, how do I know?
We can't stop when the beat just drops. We can't stop when the rebel rocks. We can't stop until we hit those highs.
Because I love punk rock, I wanna rock with heavy. Because I love hip hop, I wanna rock my beats all around the block. If I was in Baghdad, then I would rock, I rock. I wanna rock with punk, because I love punk rock. I wanna rock with heavy, because I love hip hop. I wanna rock my beats all around the block. There's just one love, so the planet will rock. Yeah. New world days and new world nights. New world wrong and new world right. With the new world funds and the new world banks. With the new world guns on the new world tanks. New world devils and new world gods. New world jails, see the new world's heart. New world names, sing new world songs. New world planes are the new world laws. New world's flying, the new world's dying. The new world's crying, the new world's trying. New world's sons and new world daughters. They're already smelling this new world water. New world beats for the new world to bang. New world streets for the new world to hang. New world president, new world drugs. New world resident, new world thugs. New world players, new world sports. New world trial, new world courts. New world lawyers and new world laws. New world prisons and new world bars. New world fight, the new world fist. New world lighting up the new world split. New world smoke on the new world gun. New world smoking the new world sky.
We can't stop when the beat just drops. We can't stop when the rebel rocks. We can't stop until we hit those heights. We can't stop because we love this high. We can't stop when the beat just drops. We can't stop when the rebel rocks.
That was Michael Franti and Spearhead from the Peace Not War Volume 2 compilation, when we had a huge anti-war movement when President Bush took us into Iraq, millions of people onto the streets. I suppose with the dangers of Trump and nationalism and war kind of coming back, we might be preparing to hit to the streets again. Coming back to the discussion around positive solutions to all of this, I mean, this back to the 70s idea that the Conservatives are attacking Corbyn with. It's kind of like this idea that capitalism is always innovative. It's the one that's modern. It's the one that's kind of progressive, that trade unionists are dinosaurs, that our ideas are old-fashioned and just won't apply to modern society. And I'm wondering if that's actually running out of steam. Nah. I mean, their world is one of zero-hour contracts. It's one where ordinary people will be condemned to death if they don't have health care, you know. And when people contrast the kind of life that we have now with the life that, like, my parents enjoyed, where working class people could buy a house, where they would have decent health care, where they could go to university without paying extraordinary fees, where education was about, you know, access and people learning rather than just huge money-making machines that these universities and stuff turned into. I don't think back to the 70s is going to cut it, you know? I think if you talk to people about those kind of rights, a lot of people, you know, think, well, that's good. Shirley, you're a young worker. Mm-hmm. When you hear about a time in recent history, 1970s, for example, where people had free university education, could buy a house, had a time and a half for working on Saturday or nights, double time for working on Sundays. What do you think about that?
Well, we think it's a myth for my generations and anyone who, you know, who has to work two jobs just to pay basic rent. You know, that's something. Yeah, we go, yeah, okay, maybe it happened, but none of us has ever seen it. So it's kind of like this mythical ideas that older generations has been talking about it, but we've never seen it. Yeah.
Do you think that that's somehow fantastical, that you don't deserve things like that, that now the world is a much more efficient and modern place?
I think it is in a way, like, because it's you know, that's the way we were taught, that this is how things goes, this is what you get. When you don't know that it's a better future or the past has been better, you don't really question it. It's only when you found out. I mean, there is 20 years ago, there's penal rates and there's double time for weekends. That's when you go, oh, hang on, how come we don't have it? So I think, especially with my generation, that lack of education or that lack of knowledge of, oh, this has happened in the past, that actually played quite a huge part on the way we think about things, about our rights as a whole. When I talk to a lot of younger workers and I go, well, did you know this is your right? And that can be the basics, like, you know, you deserve a 15-minute break. And they go, oh, I always get told that I go on break when my manager tells me, not when I get to go on a break. So that's kind of a, yeah, so it's kind of like a lost, it's kind of like lost in our rights, and we don't even know about it, and we don't know how to get it back. So,
but we've been active building the movement together, right? So in the last couple of months we've recruited a couple of hundred new young workers in the workplace we're organizing, and a lot of them are Generation Rent, as you say, you know, working hard trying to get the hours, but you know, over 50-60% of their income going to rent. And we can feel the anger there, eh? Like, people are angry about this. Like, it's not going to continue this way forever.
But people are also frightened about it, because I had the struggle for a very long time at my workplace to actually fight for hours. And when you get to that point, you're kind of frightened that, oh, if I don't do what my manager tells me, if I don't, if I don't pick up the phone when they ring me for shifts, I won't get the shift. So it's kind of like that social pressure that society has put on us, and go, because you have all these responsibilities, because you're in, by the age you're 20, you're pretty much $20,000-$30,000 in debt with student loans. And, you know, we want to have a nice lifestyle because of TVs, you see all these fancy schmancy phones and everything in the market, and you want to buy it, so you borrow a lot of money. All that social pressure puts on you, you know, you can't afford to, you know, stand up for your right in a way. Not that I'm sure a lot of younger people wants to, but when you're literally worried about where am I, if I stand up and I stood up for my right and argue back with my managers just because for a 15-minute break and then my shift got cut for next week and I'll be on the street if I can't make rent. You kind of weigh up. I mean, what do I do? Do I suck it up and just not take my break, or do I lose everything in a way?
But workers in the 1970s probably had the same questions, Mike, before they won all those rights, saying they had the same, you know, I'm poor, I can't afford to do this, but fuck it, we're going to do it.
Yeah, the famous story of the first strikes to get a break, a 15-minute paid break, and unpaid half-hour lunch break, whatever it was, in the mines, the West Coast and South Island, where my mum grew up, and my granddad was a miner in Blackball, and they had a strike in Blackball, and the four breaks, and in the midst of the trial, the judge goes, makes a little lecture about how, the workers were out of order and all the rest of it, and then Will adjourned for an hour and a half for lunch immediately after he had finished giving the workers a lecture. Given that the workers a lecture for being greedy and immoral in their desires. However, workers had to fight for those things, even in an awful place like in a mine and a coal mine in the West Coast, and that got extended legally, but it actually only became a legal right in the 2000s. But it became a contractual right largely through union negotiated contracts and so on. And even in the worst days of the Employment Contracts Act, they weren't taken away, although they were often taken away in practice because it was very hard to assert your right when you don't have union protection. This was actually why Unite launched a campaign against zero-hour contracts, because of these have become so ubiquitous in the workplace. 100,000 workers have probably been covered by it, but the lack of control over hours is radically reduces workers' ability to assert their rights, like's been explained. So if we're able to keep pressing backwards, because that's going back, we're changing the laws to make things less flexible than they were before, and we had a win in the industries, in the fast food industries, where we first fought this a couple of years ago, and we had a win last year when the law was changed to reflect that public perception change, that this complete sort of casualisation of labour rights was offensive to a large number of people in the country. So even a Tory government or a relatively right wing National Party government decided going to take some steps to limit the use of these contracts. And now we're trying to fighting in courts and in the workplace to try to get to get even more guaranteed and fixed hours and fixed shifts in industries. But that's, in a sense, is going back to the past. But the past was better than the present, where work rights have been eliminated for just far too many people.
And the right wing, talks about the past all the time, don't they? You know, they glorify old battles, Anzac Day, and I mean, someone said that about the British election that, these Labour people, Corbyn, want to bring you back to the 70s, but, the Tories want to re-legalise, what was it, fox hunting, take you back to the 1870s.
Yes.
So, those are fluid. Now, Shirley, because we were talking about the workers that you've organised, one of the big things that they're looking back to were the penal rates. Mm. So, I mean, you were a night worker, weekend worker. Those were the shifts that you did a lot of, eh?
Pretty much. It's the undesirable shifts that most people, or I would say my parents' generation, would never do, because why would you sacrifice your sleep and why would you sacrifice your health just so the company can make a little bit extra money? And that's a huge deal, and it, penal rate, up until a few years ago, I've never even heard of it. And I can say a lot of people, even now when we go back to my workplace and we go, oh, did you know that our parents used to have penal rate? And they go, what's penal rate? And they go, do you know you get paid extra for doing night shifts? They go, wow, is really? That's unheard of, and that's kind of, people don't really believe it. People just think, oh, it's something that was said, was just said, or something in theory, was never actually practiced. So it's like a myth, kind of like everything else with employment, employee workers' rights and things. It's,
but you know, it's not a myth because you organise a workplace where they get a 40% rate, eh, for yes, nights, is
for
it?
For night shifts.
Yeah?
Yeah, but again, it's, people don't believe it. You tell people that, unless they actually work there and know that there are places in New Zealand that still offers penal rate or a night shift allowance or whatever it is. People don't believe it. I mean, yeah.
Suppose when you have one victory, Mike, like a victory over 0 hours, and people start thinking more fixed shifts and, you know, getting some regularity, that kind of went into the life. Do you think it's a follow-on or flow-on that people start looking at the hours they're working and thinking, well, not every hour is equal, you know, I'm going to be working 3 a.m. at night time, you know?
Yeah, so the, in the past, under the law in this country, you used to be able to get an overtime rate after 8 hours of labour,
mm-hmm,
or 40 hours a week. You used to be able to get time and a half on Saturday for the first 4 hours, and then double time on Saturday after.
Oh, he didn't know that. Yeah. Double time after four.
Didn't even know.
and double time, double time for all hours worked on Sunday. And in a lot of union contracts, there would be rates for working unsociable and unhealthy hours.
Unhealthy,
when you're working, yeah, night shifts or rotating shifts and so on. This was all taken away in this country in the law, and then through the smashing of the union contracts, and most union contracts, not all, but in most union contracts, and in most 90% of the private sector workforce is de-unionized, so aren't covered by union contracts anyway. There's some public sector workers who have kept it, and some private sector workers. But you know, for the big majority of workers, this was taken away. But it exists across the ditch. It exists in Australia at the moment. The right wing government is trying to reduce the entitlements on a Sunday, and the media report will often report that it's the taking away of sort of penal rates on a Sunday. But it's not. The proposal is actually to reduce penal rates on a Sunday in Australia from time and three quarters to time and a half. So it's a relatively small reduction from the standpoint.
We can settle for that
from the standpoint of this country. But it's provoked a huge outrage and anger, yeah, in Australia, because it's the Australians,
hands off our rates.
The Australians have been better, and the Australian unions and workers' movement generally has been better at protecting its some of its core conditions than we were in this country in the 1990s. It's to our shame, I think, that we allowed the bosses to advance as far as they did. We should have fought harder. We should have fought longer. I think we could have beaten back a lot of these attacks that were coming at that time.
Yeah.
If we'd had the guts for it. But we were let down in large part by our leadership, I think. You know, we've got to blame the existing union leadership at that time, who just lost their bottle and ran for cover.
At the time, eh? Huge rallies.
Workers calling for general strikes, workers calling for, you know, massive actions, but the central core of the trade union leadership at that time wanted to stick its head in the sand.
Mm-hmm. Who was rather, he? We need to hunt him down.
Fight.
So, Shirley, you've had a vote in your workplace, and there's been a huge vote for penal rights.
Yeah, well, people really want penal rights. People, you know, people realize that we deserve penal rights. We're giving up our lives physically and emotionally and families just so the companies we work for can earn extra money. And that money doesn't come back to us. It's, we don't know where it is. Our work, it's not like we work night shifts so the company can earn an extra couple millions and will make our work life better. They provide us with better equipment. We don't see that money coming back to the workers. So people deserve, if you want us to work those hours, if you want us to put our health at risk for you, well, we deserve to be paid for it.
If you go into battle for this, you hope to inspire other workers in New Zealand to think about a penal red for night shifts and for the weekends?
Definitely. Especially in night shifts, because it's very, very physically and emotionally draining when you do night shifts for a long period of time. And I do hope, you know, all night shift workers or anyone who does even occasional night shifts, you know, stand up. They're working us to death in a way. I like to think it's modern day slavery, in a way. It's
where would you put the watershed if we're going to say, right, we're going to pay people 2.5 for nights? Where would you say after 10 o'clock, or you know?
Well, what's I say? Penal rates should start when the normal bedtime starts, which will be what, 9:30, 10 o'clock. It's when people start to go to bed. Kids go to bed.
How did they used to work it, Mike?
It wasn't necessarily a night shift rate. Right? Mm-hmm. That was more the exception. So it was more just overtime rate and a weekend rate. But there were some industries in some places that did have the did have a special rate for nights, but they were less common.
Yeah.
Did you think that was because a lot of industries don't? It doesn't really need people to work nights back then.
Well, probably, actually. That may be true. That may be true.
Well, that's the mantra from the bosses. You see, oh, we're living in a 24/7 world, you know. But we'll be buggering off at 5 p.m.
3 p.m. on a Friday. I think that kind of changed in New Zealand a bit. I mean, over the last 20 years, a lot of companies has extended their working and extended their hours. I remember growing up, I mean, shop closed at 5, mm-hmm. and that's it. Mm-hmm. Everyone go home at 5 o'clock, and that was the idea I grew up on. I mean, it wasn't until I actually started work, my first job at Sky City, where I realised, hang on, people actually work past 5 o'clock, and I used to go to places after 5, and it doesn't close. Like, I didn't know these places existed until I started working in one. So I think 24-hour businesses is becoming more and more common in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being, you know, so many companies extended their working hours. I just found out Burger King's open 24/7 from Thursday to Sunday. I didn't know that until a couple of days ago. I mean, bosses forces us to work more and longer hours at different hours, and that idea needs to change. So I think
penal rates are there to discourage poor behaviour and poor activity. So it's not just to reward workers for working antisocial hours, but to disincentivise people from actually making us work those hours. So it's a good idea to have penal rates on a weekend, for example, because families need to be able to do things together on 1 or 2 days of
the
week.
Take kids to football.
Yes, so, you know, sport is on the weekend. Family activities can only occur on the weekend, and so discouraging employers from making people work on weekends is a good idea for families and for children and for communities. And similarly with night work, I think discouraging employers from keeping places open 24/7 is a good idea. I think some of these fast food joints they're not even necessarily making money at this time.
No.
You know, it's just part of the branding exercise, part of the sort of trying to dominate a community or dominate the competition and all the rest of it. And I think McDonald's forces a lot of its franchises to open 24/7. I know from talking to them that they actually don't want to do that. Right? But if we had a penal rate that operated, then Then they might be discouraged.
All right, well, they colonized the whole of our lives. Here's a great song by Alan Freeland called We Want Your Soul. Listen to this.
Your cell phone, your world, your time, your ideas, no barcode, no party, no ID, no beers, your bank card, your license, your thoughts, your fears, no SIM card, no disco, no photo, not here, your blood, your sweat, your passions, your regrets, your profits, your time off, your fashions, your sex, your pills, your grass, your tits, your ass, your laughs, your balls, we want
your soul. Your house, your phone, your mind, your passion, your house, your phone,
we your want mind, your soul.
Your house, your phone, your mind, your passion, your house, your phone,
we
your
want mind, your soul.
Call us, your habits, your fats, your fears. Give us your address, your shoe size, your ears, your digits, your plans, your number, your eyes, your schedule, your desktop, your details, your life. Show us your children, your photos, your home. Here, take credit, take insurance, take a loan. Get a job, get a pension, get a haircut, get a suit. Play the lottery, play football, play the field, or some toot. We'll show you free, we'll show you soup, we'll buy you dreams, throw away your books. We'll sell you crap, we'll charge you debt. Wanna buy big things,
we'll
run the cash.
Your soul, your house, your home, we want your soul.
Your house, your home,
we want your soul.
Your house, your home,
we want your soul.
Your house, your home,
we want your
thoughts, your emotions, your love, your dreams, your checkbook, your essence, your sweat, your screams, your security, your sobriety, your innocence, your society, yourself, your place, your distance, your space.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here, watch this. Shut up. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Matters. Here's Britney, here's cola, here's pizza, here's TV, here's some rock, and some roller. Want commercials, more commercials, love Jerry, not Oprah. Buy a better life from the comfort of your sofa. Here's popcorn, here's magazines, here's milkshake, here's blue jeans, here's patty bars, here's armpit wrap, here's football shirt, here's baseball cap, here's live talk shows, here's video game, here's cola life, here's tin morning, here's filter tips, here's college lips, here's all my balls, here's plastic.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here's American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these pituary retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Your house, your
cliches, no dropouts, no gays, no lefties, no loons, no opinions, no way, no thinkers, no teachers, no facts, no freaks, no skaters, no tweakers, no truth, no one. Here's popcorn, here's magazines, here's milkshake, here's blue jeans, here's padded bars, here's armpit one, here's football shirt, here's baseball cap. Here's very, very long infomercials.
The joys of capitalism, late night. All right. Look, one thing that we've been very, very active on in the last month with Unite and our friends in the Migrant Workers Association is fighting a new series of reforms that the government has introduced to cut back on migrant labour, in particular increasing the income threshold and the point system, which is having a huge effect on a lot of our workers and members. Mike, you've been leading this work. What has the government done and why are they doing it?
They came under pressure around the issue of immigration, and this is election year, because they were trying to meet the needs of New Zealand bosses and who wanted access to cheap labour, and they wanted to promote an export education industry, as they call it, by bringing in private students. They have been increasing the numbers of temporary work visas and student visas in recent years. There was also a sudden reversal in the flow of New Zealand workers to Australia. So traditionally, you know, for about 15 or 20 years, we were losing about 30,000 workers a year to Australia, and so that needed to be replaced. So for a long time, we've had a permanent residence number of around 40,000 a year, and that's been going for 15 years at least, including when Winston Peters was in government. And that was never a particular issue, because it was necessary to replace the people who were leaving and to bring in some skills and all the rest of it. Now, the flow to Australia suddenly stopped around 2012, and at the same time they were giving a boost to temporary migrants and so on. So the net flow figure, which is the figure that everyone talks about, which is the net gain of 70,000 people a year to New Zealand, happened in the last, you know, in the last 6 months or so. They reached that sort of quite large in New Zealand terms, net gain of 70,000. Now, remember, that net gain is 1.5% of the sort of population, right? So it's not, you know, it's not like people would necessarily notice it. But it's,
well, you've been flooded by Irish fellas. There's two of them.
So, you know, it's sort of a net population gain, around 1.5% of the population. But politicians starting to blame that net gain for all the social problems, whether it's
migrants.
When Winston Peters, you know, would talk about whether it's traffic problems in Auckland or accessing education in schools and so on, and that's being echoed by Andrew Little, leader of the Labour Party. So the government. Now, it's not true that it's their fault. It's simply, it is true that the government hasn't provided the funding that's needed for the schools and for the transport systems and for the health system and for, in particular, the housing. So you've got growing populations and demand for housing, but the supply has been strangled by the government. Now, especially the supply of low-income housing for working people and state housing and so on, has just been destroyed. So, and they're trying to sell it off. So trying to blaming migrants has become an issue. The government has now moved to reduce that number, and it's done it in a way that is inhumane to those who they've promised under a different system. So they've made it much harder for people to stay, almost impossible for people to stay, who came under good faith under the old point system, the old income thresholds, and had a right to transition to permanent residence, and they should have that right restored to them.
So we're leading a campaign called Extend the Amnesty. So you're not calling for an amnesty, you're calling for its extension from the South Island to the North Island. What's this all about?
Well, the government, of course, you know, being a government that's heavily influenced by dairy farmers and their ilk, as well as sort of wrecking the waterways of the country, are also exploiting a lot of foreign labour and they want to keep their labour on the dairy farms in the South Island that they've brought over. And so they've got an exemption, which is called an amnesty by this government, but it's an amnesty from the requirements of the points and the salary. So the dairy farm workers in the South Island and some other people in the South Island can get to stay working in the South Island and access permanent residence without meeting the points or the income threshold. Mm-hmm. Now the government explains that this is because these workers are hard workers, they've made a commitment to the country and so on, but that applies to North Island workers and more broadly to all of those workers who have come here over the last several years who have tried to make New Zealand a home, and they came under rules that allowed them that possibility. They can't have the rug pulled out from under their feet. It's just inhumane.
Yeah. Now, Shirley, we talked to some Chinese workers at the weekend. We talked to a chef who was in this situation that Mike was talking about. The rules have been changed, you know, his life, you know, put into chaos. Do you think that we'll start seeing Chinese workers organize like the Indian students did against this injustice?
I certainly hope so, and I like to think that me and Julia, the co-president at CUnite, we can help them, and we're hoping that our community will help us in return by actually standing up and fight for our right, because there's going to be a lot of, you know, my fellow workers from China, India, Philippines, who are the mostly affected group of people, because I don't imagine any of them earning high enough of an income to make it.
What's the income threshold that you've got to make? Nearly $49,000, is it?
About $29 an hour, almost $30 an hour.
Sure, I don't make that.
Oh, should you?
Exactly. Yeah, Mike keeps me on poverty wages. Keep me honest.
Yeah, by raising that threshold, a lot of people will miss out. I mean, a lot of chefs, care workers, mm-hmm. all of them, they will be forced to leave this country.
Now, you think the government's done any joined-up thinking in this, you know? Because is it not true that some of these things, like, you know, the dumpling chef that we know, for example, who's going to do that job?
Well, someone who's coming into New Zealand on a 3-year visa. Mm. They're going to be making your dumplings for the next 3 years, Joe.
So they're going to make it, that's the absurd thing. They're going to make those who are here under that income threshold to leave and replace them with workers on essential skills visas, but these visas can only last for 3 years maximum, and then you have to leave for a year and maybe come back again. Now, there's no logic in that. There's no logic. People who are already here, who could stay, who want to stay. Not everyone wants to stay, of course, but those who came here with the hope of staying and had the points, they could have got a permanent residence visa, should be allowed to do a trip to continue that path to transition to permanent residency. And it's it's changing the rules on somebody halfway through, and that's fraud in my view. You tell somebody that if they do this particular course and pay this particular amount of money, and it's tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars accumulated, yeah. that if you do that, then you get a right to a work visa and you can transition to permanent residence, and then you tell them, no, we've changed the rules on you. That's just fraud.
Mm. Well, to finish this week's show, I just want to talk about a struggle that we were involved in a couple of months ago. We haven't had a show since, but we put up a big fight for some of the Indian students who were ripped off, who were defrauded by the education machine that we have here, which is for profit. It's not for skill. Like Mike says, a lot of migrant workers are encouraged to go on these courses. The agents abroad sell them the dream that if you do this, if you
false
do
promises.
This, you'll get a you get a pathway to PR. And there's just a huge bitter test, I think, in the Indian community after this. I think this attack on workers, you know, will be organized against. I wonder this time, though, have they actually thought this through? You know, is this just a, do you think it's a cheap Trumpist kind of turn, Mike? Does it make actually economic sense in their own minds?
I think that it's been designed by a bureaucrat to meet a political end, and it has a certain neat administrative ease to it. So I don't think that I don't think the minister is in charge of his own portfolio. I don't think he knew what was happening when the 0 hour stuff was being Milt Wilkinson was being discussed, negotiated, and so on. I don't think he knows what's happening around this one. I think the bureaucrats have done him, because what they've done is they've created this sort of they're making the essential skills category group fit in with the permanent residence points and visa system, and because they know that they can do the permanent residence on those points and incomes, then they just they're making the essential skills people just be a de-skilled category.
Well, look out for Unite Union and our friends in the movement as we fight for the rights for migrant workers, as we fight to extend the amnesty to the North Island, as we fight for penal rates, as we fight for fixed shifts. We're Unite Unions, and we're fighting mass destruction. And here's Faithless with Mass Destruction.
Whether long-range weapon or suicide bomb, a wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether your sorrow is son or BBC One, misinformation is a weapon of mass destruction. You could have Caucasian or Rapport Asian. Racism is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether inflation or globalization, fear is a weapon of mass destruction. My dad came into my room holding his hat. I knew he was leaving. He sat on my bed, told me some facts, son. I have a duty calling on me, you and your sister, be brave, my little soldier. And don't forget all I told you. You're the mister of the house, now remember this. And when you wake up in the morning, give your mama a kiss. Then I had to say goodbye. In the morning, woke mama with a kiss on each eyelid. Even though I'm only a kid, certain things can't be hid. Mama grabbed me, held me like I was made to go, but left her in the stories untold. I said, Mama, it'll be alright when Daddy comes home tonight. There's a long-range weapon or suicide bomb. A wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether you're SolarWinds son or BBC One, misinformation is a weapon of mass destruction. You could have Caucasian or Rapport Asian. Racism is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether inflation or globalization, fear is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether Halliburton, Enron or anyone, greed is a weapon of mass destruction. We need to find courage, overcome. Inaction is a weapon of mass destruction. Inaction is a weapon of mass destruction. Inaction is a weapon of mass destruction. My story stops here. Let's be clear, this scenario is happening everywhere. And you ain't going to Nirvana or Farvana. You coming right back here to live out your karma with even more drama than previously. Seriously. Just how many centuries have we been waiting for someone else to make us free? And we refuse to see that people overseas suffer just like we. Bad leadership and egos unfettered and free. They feed on the people they're supposed to lead. I don't need big people to pray and wait for the Lord to make it all straight. There's only now to do it right. Cause I don't want your daddy leave me home tonight. Where
Because a long-range weapon or suicide bomb, a wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether you're solar away, son, or BBC One, misinformation is a weapon of mass destruction. You could have Caucasian or Raporation. Racism is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether inflation or globalization, fear is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether Halliburton, Enron, or anyone, greed is a weapon of mass destruction. We need to find courage.